Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This morning we're going to talk about the story about the teacher that actually was having he was accused of raping a 14-year-old, and he was given 30 days in jail. And this was a while back. This didn't happen recently, but he was put before a judge in Montana, a judge, Todd Bow, and the judge watched some videos, apparently, and was privy to some social networking sites, and decided that the 14-year-old in question was much older than her years. And because of that, he sentenced this teacher to 30 days in jail. And after everything, hit the airwaves, she committed suicide. And now, several years later, there's some controversy over what took place and the judge's reaction. And I watched a video with this Montana judge, and I'm going to try really hard to say this without sounding judgmental. This gentleman, I know nothing about him. I've never seen him before, and I've certainly still never seen him in person. But I want to tell you, on this video, he's sitting at a desk in kind of like a unironed kind of cowboyish shirt with a one of those ties, like a Western tie with a bowl or something that holds the tie together. And he doesn't look completely in charge of all of his faculties. Now, again, I don't know if he is or he isn't. This is based solely on my first opinion or my first observation of this gentleman, which sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Because that's what he did to a young girl who was beautiful and full of life. And the pictures that I saw, she didn't look 14. She looked older than 14, but she wasn't. And this man could be another Einstein. But by looking at him, that's not the assessment I make. Isn't it too bad that it is my right to make that assessment, but my assessment of him is not going to harm him in any way, because I'm not sitting in a seat where I have to be careful or make sure that my visual assessment is right. But that's what he did. And that's what a lot of people do. A lot of people recently watched Miley Cyrus. Adorable child, adorable. Every grandchild I have watched Hannah Montana. She can sing, she can dance, she's funny, she's got a really cute personality. She became a movie star. Well, I don't know if she's done movies, but she became a celebrity overnight. And then she does this show that she did last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, on television, that was stunningly risque and actually kind of gross, in my opinion. She was barely dressed. Her body language spoke volumes. And then last night, I see a picture of her. I'm at Publix, and I open up an Inquirer, and here's a picture of Miley Cyrus with flannel bunny jammies on and big furry bunny slippers waiting at an airport to go someplace. Now, all of this goes together. All of this goes together. This goes to our perception and how we look at things. Now, on a side note for Miley Cyrus, I hope those people that love her and that care about her are paying very close attention. Because if I have ever in my adult life seen somebody screaming for attention, that would be it. She did what she did to show everybody that she can do whatever she wants to do. And they allowed it. People who hopefully have better judgment. And, I mean, when you do a show like what she did, there's lots of practice, everybody. There's lots of days, hours, weeks spent on stage figuring out what your moves are going to be, who's going to do what, where the lights are going to be, where everything's going to be. Everybody saw that performance, and nobody stopped it. Nobody did anything. None of the adults in her life, including her famous father and all the producers and all the people that are supposed to be looking out for this kid, nobody did anything. The same with this 14-year-old girl. This 14-year-old girl that gets raped by a teacher, somebody had to be knowing, watching, paying attention, and yet nobody did anything. I want to read this story that I found on the internet because, of course, this is sad news. But I just wanted to show everybody the correlation between everything else that's going on in the world. And it all comes back to the same thing that we talk about every day. And that's that everybody should be paying attention. If you want to change somebody's actions and you want to do something about decisions somebody is making, the president needs a lot less help from you than these young people. Do you get my drift? This is about helping people that are just forming their way in this world. And yet, nobody does anything. And we're surrounded by this all the time, surrounded by it. I watched American Idol this year. I saw so many young people who were so incredibly talented, singers, dancers, this one little group from Miami. They got very, very close to winning. Their whole troupe got very close to winning. And now the teachers at this school, their two youngest children are participating in America's Got Talent this year, and they are amazing. But again, to become that good at anything is grueling. I hope somebody's watching them. Okay, I want to bring in Shelley because I want to read most of this article so that we can talk about this, and then we're going to move on to some of the other things that I just talked about. Including Miley Cyrus and a few other things that are out there for all of us to see. Good morning, Shelley. Shelley.
Oh, sorry, I had it muted because I didn't know if you were bringing me in.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, and you?
I'm good. I watched so much yesterday and read so much yesterday, and of course I had already had this this particular story about this this rapist, this teacher who got 30 days in jail, and the reason he got 30 days in jail is because this Montana judge watched some videos and met this young woman and said that she was, you know, she might have been 14 chronologically, but any other way she was much older, so he should only get 30 days. And ultimately she took her own life after all of the media and personal judgment she got from her school, etc. So I'm going to read this story, but it kind of pulls together so many other things, like the Miley Cyrus story, the thing that we talked about at the end of the week last week about sextortion, and a lot of different things that kind of all, you know, kind of all coincide. But I'm going to start with this. So if it's easier for you to mute and listen that way, I'll bring you in as soon as I read this. A Montana judge who ordered 30 days in jail for a rapist teacher wants to reconsider the sentence. District Judge G. Todd Bow drew wide-ranging protests in late August after he claimed a teenage girl was older than her chronological age and as much in control of the situation as her creepy teacher. The teen, Charisse Morales, committed suicide in 2010 while the case against teacher Stacey Rambold was pending. Bow later apologized for his comments, calling them stupid and wrong. He has set a hearing for Friday to re-examine the sentence. Lawyers for the state and Yellowstone County say he's too late. Prosecutors are appealing the illegal sentence, arguing Bow bypassed mandatory minimums when he let 54-year-old Rambold off easy. They have filed papers to block Bow's Friday hearing and allow their appeal to go forward. We believe that the sentence Judge Bow imposed on Stacey Rambold is illegal, Attorney General Tim Fox said in a release. Using the means provided by state law, we are appealing his sentence and working diligently to ensure that justice is served. An online petition demanding Bow's resignation had over 51,000 signatures on Thursday morning. So he's still a teacher on top of everything else. The controversy began on August 26th when Bow criticized Morales, who was 14 during her 2007 relationship with Rambold.
I think the resignation was for the judge, not for the teacher. Can you go back and read that sentence again?
Mm-hmm. We believe the sentence Judge Bow imposed by appealing the sentence. Yes, an online petition demanding Bow's resignation had over 51,000 signatures on Thursday morning. Yes, that's Bow is the judge. You're right. The controversy began on August 26th when Bow criticized Morales, who was 14 during her 2007 relationship. Yeah, why did I say the teacher? I thought I understood that too.
Okay.
Not the teacher, the judge. The controversy began on August 26th when Bow criticized Morales, who was 14 during her 2007 relationship with Rambold. Bow sentenced the teacher to 15 years in prison, but suspended all but 31 days. He knocked off another day for time served. God. Bow and prosecutors now agree that sentence conflicted with state law that would have forced Rambold to serve at least 2 years behind bars. Rambold was arrested in 2008 after Morales told a youth counselor about a series of sexual encounters. The case is still pending in 2010 when Morales killed herself. Weakened by the loss of their star witness, prosecutors decided to cut a deal with Rambold. They agreed to defer prosecution if he completed a sex offender treatment center or treatment program. The deal fell apart in 2012 after prosecutors learned that Rambold was kicked out of the treatment program for a series of violations. Program administrators said Rambold missed meetings and had unsupervised visits with minors and began having sex with a woman without telling them. Prosecutors refiled charges in December and sought 20 years in prison with 10 years suspended. Bao offended a wide swath of the public when he opened his mouth in August at the sentencing, dropping part of the blame on Morales. The dead girl's mother, Aaliyah Hanlon, who was in court that day, said through her attorney she supported the appeal and the attorney general's involvement. Mrs. Hanlon was horribly disappointed with the 30-day sentence and was frankly quite shocked, said her attorney, Shane Colton, whatever. She's pleased that the county attorney's office and attorney general's office understands that the most significant date to be considered in this sentencing is Charisse's birthday. She was 14. Rambold has begun serving his 30 days at the state prison in Deer Lodge. Prosecutors estimate the appeal could take 6 to 18 months to work its way through the state Supreme Court. It's not clear whether they'll try to keep Rambold locked up during that time. I have to assume that this appalls as many people as it does me. First of all, the original case is sickening. And now even the handling of it looks like, you know, it's being taken care of by the Oompa Loompas or something. For God's sakes, what's everybody thinking?
I know. And this case started back in 2008?
Yep.
That's the biggest problem with our judicial system. We trip over ourselves. I do not understand. I've been involved in a couple of court cases recently, and nothing is ever clarified.
I lost her, everybody. Okay, she's probably talking about some court cases that I know she's been involved in, and she's talking about the fact that clarification is always very elusive, and indeed it is. Very, very elusive. Here she's back. I'm going to open her up again. Let her finish her thought. Are you back, honey? Okay.
Yeah, I just went through Atlantic. It always drops my call there. But what I was saying is that nothing ever gets resolved in the hearing that you go for. They always I'm not criticizing any one particular judge, because I did experience one who I thought was extremely competent, but I have to be very honest when I say of four court cases I've been involved in the past few years, three of the four judges, in my estimation, did not handle it competently because they had enough information to make a decision. They chose not to make a decision because of distraction tactics from the other party. And instead of sticking to decisions that they had made in a prior hearing, they decided to postpone it again. It's almost like they don't want to make a decision, so they just keep postponing. This one judge postponed a particular case four times, and the last hearing now was almost 10 months ago, and we don't even have a next court date. It's ludicrous, you know? Mm-hmm. And although it's not anything as substantial as this criminal case, it just goes to show our judicial system is in disarray. And I don't know if anything's being done by the powers that be to fix that, because it's getting worse and worse and worse. Their laws are tripping over each other. We have laws being created now that contradict laws that are still in existence, and instead of getting rid of the laws that don't apply anymore, they create new laws, and then you have judges that can basically select which law they want to impose. I've seen that a couple of times. You know,
well, that's an absolute truth. That's an absolute truth, what you just said. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it all depends on how articulate and how innovative your lawyer is.
Because they can
bring up old precedences that have taken place in any courtroom in the United States of America, where somebody has said, yes, it's okay to do that, and they can argue that case against the case that you're participating in. And
mm-hmm.
if there's any similarities that the judge believes, and then, of course, he can say, yes, that's true, And then if you're in a trial by jury, then, of course, then you're up to, now there's usually six jurists, and it's up to the interpretation of six different people, which can become incredibly convoluted. That doesn't seem like a lot of people, I realize that. But getting six people to agree on something that gets discussed until it's so kind of disemboweled and all over the board, and you got to pick from this and pick from that and figure out which is the truth, it gets pretty confusing. And of course, that's one of the biggest reasons that there's so many things the rest of us are just seeing what they want us to see, and we're like, what the hell were they thinking?
Because
there's been so much put on the plate.
Exactly. That unfold during a court case. Aren't there 12 jurors, 10 plus two alternates? Isn't it 12?
No, very rare. Almost always six now. So, and there's always two alternates, but they're not. I don't know of any that I've participated in the last few years where there's been more than six. So I thought in the beginning that it had something to do with the size of a courtroom or the size of a town or something like that, but it does not. And maybe they realize that 12 people can take forever to get 12 people to agree on something. Now, along with this, because I kind of researched all the different things that are going on out there, I found something pretty interesting in Coral Springs. There is a dance teacher is accused of having a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old boy. Police arrested Jennifer DeBerry, 30, of Coral Springs Friday after an 8-month investigation into a sexual relationship she allegedly was having with a teenage boy, said department spokesperson Carla, it doesn't matter whatever name was because I can't say it anyway, Kimio Tech or something. DeBerry, who is a dance instructor and the manager of the Dance Effect Studio located on Royal Palm Beach in Coral Springs, was charged with a felony for one count of lewd and lascivious battery. She was booked into Broward County Jail on Friday and later released on a $10,000 bond. The boy said he met DeBerry at the Dance Effect Studio when he was 13, and they began a sexual relationship when he was 15, according to the complaint affidavit. Police said the relationship lasted from September 2012 to January of this year. In their last encounter on January 26th, DeBerry and the minor spent 5 hours alone together at the boy's Coral Springs home, according to the complaint affidavit. Their intimate relationship was documented in 117 pages of text messages from November 2012 through January of this year. One of the many exchanges documented in the complaint affidavit reads, "It was so perfect and amazing, and making love with you was the greatest feeling in the whole world." Police said the boy's Facebook and email accounts also detailed an intimate relationship with DeBerry. And police are asking anybody who knows anything about it to talk to them. So here we have another scenario, very scary. I've heard probably, I don't know how many times in my lifetime, a 15-year-old boy being seduced by an older woman. It's always been something that was, like a notch on their bedpost, so to speak. And people actually talked about it like it was like a part of passing into adulthood. It's still not okay, everybody. It's still not the right thing to do. A 30-year-old woman who has sex with a 15-year-old who is exactly half her age should be ashamed of herself, and she should be punished for that. Because what she's done is she's not only opened up a world of all of that, she's put herself in a place to change that boy's life forever, forever, ever, ever. And that's not right. That's just not right. So, and she's out on a $10,000 bond. And now that she's done things like this, what's going to stop her from doing anything else? In essence, she is a young man's predator. That brings me to this sextortion thing. Remember, who mentioned the sextortion to us last week? Somebody said something about everybody's talking about sextortion, where they actually are solicited via emails and texts and all different kinds of things on social websites. Do you remember who talked about that? Was it you, Shelley, that said something about sextortion?
No, actually, this is the first I've heard of it. I don't remember this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody said something to me that I should investigate sextortion. That it was it is in the dictionary now, and there is a there is an actual I don't know what you want to call it. There's an actual explanation of what it's about, and it's scary because a lot of it is being done by people in leadership roles,
right.
And they're actually there's teachers, according to this. I didn't read any stories that gave me names or exact dates. So again, this could be conjecture taking place on the web. Imagine my surprise. But it says that there are teachers that give better grades for sexual favors, which is sextortion. There are public officials that are giving out permits and passing things that wouldn't normally pass through sextortion. All kinds of, I guess you would call it black sex mail or something. I don't know. But it would be somebody in power can hold that over your head and get what they want or what they desire, and then you'll get what you need. So I don't like that either. That's scary for me. But all of this kind of comes back to this kid, Miley Cyrus. I mean, all the stuff that she did in the past few weeks, and then, like I said, I pick up an Inquirer last night, and I thought, well, what the hell is this supposed to be? What is this little girl at a pajama party or something? She's got a phone up to her ear, and she's got flannel bunny jammies on with big fluffy bunny slippers, and even something on her head, it looked like, at an airport waiting to get on an airplane. And we've gone from that to wearing no clothes on national television. And everybody's ridiculing her, and everybody's, you know, saying, oh, my God, what the hell's the matter with her? What the hell's the matter with the people that put on the show?
Right.
Why isn't there any conversation out there about what they did to her? They actually exploited this kid.
I don't get it. I'm on the same page with you with that, because a lot of times, you know, people criticize the performer, but the performer didn't think of the act. The performer is hired and paid to perform something that's created by somebody else. They don't create their own shows. You know, they have producers and creators of the show, and then they hire actors or singers or dancers or some kind of performers. So how come nobody ever reacts to the producers of these shows? They always talk about the performers like, oh, my God, how could they do that? Well, because that's what they were told to do. That's what the part was, you know. I mean, it's up to their decision to decide to do it. They're certainly part of the equation. But it wasn't a solo decision, and there were all these other actors and actresses and stagehands. I mean, like you said, there's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of people involved in a production. And, so everybody should be called into question when you have something like that.
Well, that's what I don't get. And and anything I've read and any picture I've seen, I mean, she's been all over the Internet. And, of course, then there's always the fact that we all know that anytime they do something that brings them right to the front and center of every bit of attention is good for their career. Even when it's bad for their career, it's good for their career.
Yep.
You know, because it brings them right back there to the forefront, which is where they need to be successful. Look,
I mean,
she,
after all that controversy
with
her, and she's released, what, at least two albums since all that nonsense, you know, she's still a big draw. She's still doing cooperative releases with two other artists that I'm aware of, you know, so it's like, you know, all that, and like you said, it didn't affect her all. Well, first of all, I think she's very talented, but but the bottom line is, it didn't even affect her. It's like, you know.
Well, look at Lindsay Lohan, another
yeah.
young girl, absolutely beautiful, a good actress. I mean, I watched a show with her in it the other night, and I thought to myself, you know, she's so cute. What the hell happened? Look at even people like Drew Barrymore, who started out as a very, very young child. And, of course, she's now everybody's forgotten all the horrible things she did when she was a tween and a teen, because now she's moved past that and other, you know, other stories and everything have evolved. But, of course, she's also not front and center anymore. Neither is Britney. Neither is Lindsay Lohan. The ones that shock everybody the most. So for all I know, this was a ploy at her expense by the adults that are getting a nickel from this little girl to express, you know, her cutting edge personality. How do we know that all these grown-ups didn't know she, you know, she'll cash in from this?
That's right.
And they get a piece of that pie. So, again, it's the leaders. It's the leaders that are, you know, everybody's saying, oh, my God, what was she thinking? Is she on drugs? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, come on. This is a big show. And what about the kid there, the one that's singing now all the time? I can't think of his name. He was on the one that she danced with on that show. Can't think of his name.
I don't remember.
But his father is in show business too. His father, but his father was not a singer or anything. But anyway,
Rainey, I have to mute you for about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. All right. So now, what's happening with her is, you know, first of all, she's going to need some help mentally because she's not old enough to be able to sort through all the things that these adults in her life have okayed her to do, and then she gets to face all the ridicule. So, again, this is about a good percentage of the problem is about the adults that are in the picture and what they allow it to do. From these people that are harming teenagers for their own pleasure, this dance teacher in Coral Springs, I mean, you know, what was she thinking? Was she thinking? Is it only about our own personal pleasure and then, you know, we just face the consequences later? Or do people actually make themselves believe that it's okay to behave that way? Mind you, I understand that there are 15-year-olds out there that look like they're 25. I understand that there are 15-year-olds out there there are 25-year-olds out there that look like they're 15. I get all that. But the maturity of somebody has to enter into things. And if you're foolish enough to be caught up in some kind of a relationship with somebody and you all of a sudden find out that they're under the age of 18, there should be something that exercises in your brain to tell you that this probably isn't a good thing. It's probably not right, not morally, not anyway, okay, because you're changing the rules and the path and the life of a child, no matter how you want to look at it. You are going to be an integral part of what path this child continues on when you open up a door like an affair or, in this one teacher's case, he was actually accused of rape. It was not consensual. This little girl did not want to have a relationship with him. He forced himself on her. So all of these things, again, I say to you, this has to be paid attention to by the adults, by the people that should be paying attention and keeping an eye on things. Now, there's another story that I found this morning online that had me upset too, and I've steered a long ways away from gun control. Having grown up in upstate New York, I was aware of the importance of a gun to a young man growing up in upstate New York. They were all hunters. Deer season before Thanksgiving was a big deal. It was a coming together of fathers and sons and brothers and cousins and grandfathers, and everybody participated in something that had been going on for decades. Also, trap shooting and skeet shooting and things like that is a major pastime in a lot of states in the northern part of the United States and in the western part of the United States. So taking away a gun for me seemed like, you know, that's really not the answer, because a bad guy or a bad girl is going to use whatever they can to inflict harm on somebody else. Guns, yes, are almost always the ultimate silencer, but there's other things too. So I've stayed clear of this topic for those reasons, because I do understand the history behind having a gun in your home and being a hunter and being a sportsman with the gun, etc. So today, while I was researching some of these other stories to see if there was anything more on this rape and what was going to happen with this teacher, and the story about Miley Cyrus, because I kind of hurts me to see somebody with that much talent who's being, she's being sextorted as well, just like the other people that we talked about. Then I came across a story that two friends, actually related friends, cousins or something like that, decided to prank another cousin. So they were all on their way to do something together, and they thought that they'd go in the back door of the cousin's house and hide and scare them. So they snuck in the back door and hid in a closet and were going to jump out and scare them. Well, the cousin heard them and thought there was a dangerous person in their home and shot them. And the article isn't real clear, but I got from it that one of them died. And I thought to myself, oh my God. So now this cousin, who obviously they were close and in a good place with each other, actually killed their cousin. So that was heartbreaking to me, really, really heartbreaking to me. And I don't know that, you know, anybody's ever going to get over that. But again, the people that were interviewed were the parents, I guess the aunt and uncle of all of these teenagers. And, of course, they're devastated by everything that happened. But now there's some controversy over why and what the reason would be for a gun to be that available to a young person again in a home. So, again, it was up to the adult. I understand. Part of me understands that, you know, there's a gun here. If you ever, you know, if you ever think somebody's breaking into the house, here's where I keep the gun. But not everybody is suitable to be given that kind of responsibility, I don't think. Are you back, Shelley?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. There's somebody else on the line, but it's not a phone number, and I'm going to apologize to this person because whenever something comes up that is a name or a weird number or something, it's usually somebody who's just trying to be hurtful and mean. So I hope you'll forgive me, but I'm probably not going to open up this line because I'm afraid that that's what's going to happen here, because every time I've done it, it's been somebody who's just, you know, trying to be, first of all, very immature, and secondly, doesn't really care to add anything that's important to the show. So I'm sorry. If you call back in on a regular phone number, I'll be happy to open your conversation up. So again, we have did you just hear what I said about the two teenagers, honey?
Yes. Yeah. No, I was listening the whole time. I had stopped to go inside a store, and it's very loud. They played music and stuff, so I don't want it I don't want it to cause distraction on your end. So that's why I'd use my phone.
Okay. Well, so that happened close by here, someplace, but that just broke my heart too. And then there was
The only thing I didn't hear is how old was the teenager who shot her cousins. Was it a female?
They were like 15. They were like 15 and 16. These kids, the two girls that went over together, but I think it was a boy cousin who got the gun out and shot, thinking that it was somebody who was breaking into their house.
Oh wow. You're right. I mean, how do you ever recover from something like that?
Yeah, and it started out to be a joke, you know, a prank. My teenagers are big on pranks as well, and I have to tell them all the time that you have to be careful that your pranks don't go overboard and hurt somebody. So
that's right. That's right.
And
I know somebody that had pranked a sibling. This is a friend of a friend. I'm not real close to them, but I heard the story. And it the same thing. If there had been a gun in the house, he could have gotten shot. Because he pretended to be an intruder. And like you, as I always think of things, I don't understand why people think that's funny, you know, to scare the wits out of somebody to the point where they think they're in mortal danger. What if they got a knife? Not even a gun. You know, sometimes when you scare somebody enough, they protect themselves, and in that moment, they're in fight or flight mode. So they're like they can have hyper strength. They can grab a knife where they normally wouldn't. I mean, you know, and then you put them in a position of doing something that they, you know, they may have to live with for the rest of their lives, and you may not, you know.
That's it. Well, I mean, that's why I said I steer clear of all of the gun issues, because I do have real mixed emotions, and because I don't use a gun myself. I did when we were young. I went trap shooting with Spike. Spike was an avid trap shooter and shot for a team of guys that, you know, he was good friends with. And I would do it on occasion. I was not very good at it because I have a tendency to pull the trigger and close my eyes, which tends to make you miss the target. But it was still fun. It was, you know, out in the brisk fall air, and even in the wintertime they shot trap and stuff like that, and they enjoyed it. It was great.
Yeah.
So,
I know what you're talking about, because I used to, my uncle and my aunt, when we lived, I lived in New York, and they had a place way out on Long Island, a huge piece of property, and there was a rifle range and a skeet shooting range together, and we used to go and shoot a target inside. And then we'd go outside and shoot at skeet. And I was actually pretty good at it. But, I never wanted to, obviously, you know, the whole animal lover thing. I mean, I never wanted to shoot animals. But I did like shooting guns. I mean, it felt great. You know, I actually became a pretty decent marksman at one point. So the challenge and so I understand that the pull of it. What disturbs me is how many young people are allured to it, not because of the marksman, not because they're developing a sports ability, but because they want to hoard power over somebody else. They want to make people fear them. They want to make people respect them. They think that a gun is going to make people respect them, which is nonsense. It's just going to make people fear you. Nobody's going to respect you. They're just going to fear you. And if you don't have the gun and they see you at another time, you're in trouble. Where people respect you, they're always going to treat you decently, you know. So so that's my only issue with guns is that a lot of younger people, a lot of people in general, it's not only young people, are taking to guns not recreationally, but as a way of lording power over other people. And that's it should be for defensive purposes or recreational purposes, not for aggression. And too many people have it for aggressive purposes.
Well, and I think the word protection is used an awful lot. And again, yes, a gun could protect you. I understand that, and I understand that thought. But I also understand the fact that with a gun comes great responsibility, and protection is important. And I understand that if you're, I mean, I know a lot of older women that carry small guns and have permits for them and everything, but they do a lot of traveling. They're businesswomen. They jump in their car and drive 600-700 miles in a day to get to be someplace for a meeting, and they're in and out of gas stations on the turnpike and places like that. And they carry the gun for their own personal protection. And I remember talking with three one time all at the same time and saying to them, have you ever had to use your gun? No, never. And a lot of it is just so that I'm not fearful. And I said, what will happen if you have to use it? And what will happen if you don't make a good judgment call and pull your gun out and somebody really isn't going to hurt you? Well, I don't know. They'd say to me, Renee, I don't know. I don't know how I'll react because it hasn't happened yet. So in my heart, I worried for them. I worried for them more than I would have worried for them before I found out they carried the gun and knew they traveled all the time. Having the gun in their purse made me worry more about them than I would have without the gun, for whatever that's worth.
Well, the one thing I will say, because I haven't actually gotten a gun yet, but I do have a gun permit. And when I went through the class, you have to go through this like 3-hour class in order to get a permit for a concealed weapon, not for like a rifle or something. But if you want to carry a concealed weapon, you have to have a permit for that. And I have to be honest, I was actually pretty impressed with the psychology that they teach you. And it's not mandatory, but I actually think it should be mandatory that if anybody's going to carry a concealed weapon, they should have to take this course annually, just like with other certifications, or buy it, you know, or every 2 years, like a massage therapist or something. Because I think people lose sight of the psychology, and they really do teach you how to have a defensive, not an offensive, attitude with the gun. Like, don't all of a sudden start walking around feeling powerful. This should be completely last resort. If you can leave an area, leave an area. You know, Don't stay in an area where you feel unsafe just because you've got a gun. If you feel you're in a threatful situation, leave. The gun should be, you have no resort, and if you don't pull the gun right then, it's you or this other.
I think I lost Shelley again. Well, but that's a good point. And the gun should be purely for protection, if you really, really, really feel as though you're in some kind of jeopardy. Otherwise, it shouldn't even be in play. So I kind of finished your sentence for you, Shelley. Are you back?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I agree with you there. And again, you know, you're the first person to tell me about what the class is about, and I do think that it sounds like it's a good class, and I would assume that a great deal of thought goes into what the class should be about and what should be mentioned. But again, it all depends on who you're teaching as to what they get out of it.
Right.
And it's still...
The other thing, too, when you're talking about having a concealed weapon, a lot of the accidents that happen are because people get guns and then never practice with it. And then they're finally left with having to use it, and they shoot themselves, they take a lock off or whatever, you know, and they make a mistake and they either injure themselves or an innocent bystander. If you're going to get a concealed weapon, if this is your choice, you really have to practice with the weapon. They're not easy to use. You know, anything with practice becomes second nature, but the more comfortable you are with the weapon, the more you know how to use it, you are minimizing the opportunity that there might be a mistake or that you might misuse it or misfire it or something like that. And it also gives you confidence when you do go to use it that you know what you're doing, that you know how to aim it properly, that you hit your mark and not somebody, you know, 2 feet from your mark, that kind of a thing. So that plays a big part of it also, is that, and they emphasize that in the class, but I know people that own guns that don't do that. They get the gun and that's it. And it's like, you know, the first time they go to use it, what's going to happen? You're going to forget how, because it's, you know, there's like 8 or 9 steps. Once you get used to it, it becomes habit like anything else. When I drive a car, I don't think about all the different things I'm doing. My body is doing it automatically now, you know. I don't think about what my foot's doing or how to hold the steering wheel or when I have to change my, it's just, it's all automatic. The same thing would happen with using a gun. When you practice, all of a sudden, all these like 8 different things you have to do become habit. You don't even think about them anymore. But if you don't practice, it's the first time you go to use it, you're going to get hurt. Or you're going to hurt somebody innocent. And you hear these stories all the time, you know. So that's my little 2 cents on that. You're going to get a gun,
well,
you practice, you know how to use it.
Yeah. Well, and be smart. And Shelley's right. And it's like I said, that's why I worried about these ladies, because I got the distinct impression that that's exactly what they did. I have a gun in my purse now. I'm safe. And nothing could be further from the truth. And what Shelley just, the point she just made about making sure that you're comfortable with it, that you know how to use it, and that it becomes almost, well, I don't want to say like a habit using a gun, but certainly the comfort zone is incredibly important if you're going to carry a gun and have the opportunity to use it. You must know how to use it. And I do think that that's one of the things that gets kind of lost in the shuffle. So that's good information. And if you have done something like that and you are thinking about carrying a gun because you do travel a lot and you're alone and you do night hours and everything, I understand the issues. I just, I'm glad you brought that up, Shelley, because that even makes me feel more comfortable explaining to people the plus of making sure that you know what you're doing with it. And, of course, how if I were to look up online how many times somebody accidentally gets shot with a gun, I think it would probably hurt all of our hearts. So I do think that is an issue, and I do, and I'm not just talking about a 10-year-old who finds dad's gun in the cupboard. I'm talking about people who think that they're an adult, and how hard can it be if I don't point it at myself and pull the trigger? I'm going to be perfectly safe, when that's not always the truth. So I'm glad you made that point, and I think those kind of classes are available in lots of different places, even sometimes in schools, they have gun classes and things. Yeah.
And if you get groups together, anywhere from like 4 people and up, you can get these instructors to come to your house, and then they'll charge you group rates, and it's a little bit less than going into an actual facility. And they're still licensed, and you get the license and everything at the end, so you can actually, you know. And like I said, it is a beneficial class, because they go into the psychology as much as the technique. And the other thing, too, is that if you aren't comfortable with your gun and you pull it out, I guarantee you that a perpetrator is going to know you're not comfortable, and they'll grab it from you. This is one of the things they taught, and they're absolutely right. You know, if you're pulling your gun on somebody who's comfortable with using a gun, like somebody who also is armed, they're going to know whether or not you know how to use that weapon. And if they think that you're intimidated in the least amount by your weapon,
they will just simply grab it from you. That was one of the things they taught us in the class, which I was pretty impressed with, is that he would have you hold the gun, and then, bam, all of a sudden it'd be out of your hand. You didn't even know that he was going for it. So, and it, what it does is it gives you confidence of holding it the right way so that someone can't grab it from you. You know, I mean, they went into all this. It was a really good class. And if anybody's taking it, I suggest they don't take it lightheartedly and they pay attention to every little aspect they teach you, because I thought it was a very powerful class. But I know how some people attend, you know, they just want to get through, get the certificate. And meanwhile, I got a lot out of it, and I thought every point they made was very, very valuable.
Well, and that's good information. That's good information. If you are in a place where you feel as though you would be safer, and, of course, that is your right as an American, something else that you shouldn't take too lightly, and do it the right way. Don't do it. There are some things in this life we can do half-assed, not a lot of them. And that would be one of them. That would be something that you have to take very seriously and do with some expertise. So on that note, I also wanted to remind everybody very soon, I know in other parts of the United States it's happening now where I'm from up north, it's carnival time and fair time. The fall often... the carnivals and fairs that travel all the way around the United States and go to all the different areas, they go to where the weather is the most conducive for them being there. And, of course, here in Florida, most of our carnivals take place between the month of October and November all the way through to January and February. And I came across an article today when a very harmless ride at a carnival, a ride that I've always let the little kids go on, is that big, it's like a merry-go-round, but it swings. The swings that hang from the chains, and they spin you way out. And obviously, it seems like a relatively safe ride. You're harnessed in. You have to be a certain size to get on the swing, even the children's swing. And it looks like you'd be relatively safe. Well, apparently at a carnival this week, the swing stopped. Just all of a sudden, like somebody slammed the brakes on the swing. Now, if you've been on one of those before, you notice that it just slows down gradually. And not a problem. But this swing stopped, like, dead.
You have to go through the front doors, right? You can't enter in through here.
No, I know. They're not open here. Right.
And they hurt quite a few kids. And so the point I want to make is if you do the carnivals, my family and I always go to the big fairs, the Broward County Fair, the Palm Beach Fair, and to the smaller ones that come to churches and places like that and schools. The kids love them, and we have a good time at them. But please be careful. Have a look at the rides. Make sure that the people that are running the rides look like they're paying attention to what they're doing, and keep you and your kids safe when you go to some of these things. If it's a rinky-dink fair and you don't recognize the name of it, my suggestion would be that you steer clear from some of those little ones, because the rides are intricate. And the machinery that runs these rides is intricate. So please be careful, because there's nothing worse than thinking you're going to have a day of fun and family gathering and everything and have somebody get hurt at a place like that. So just be aware and be careful. But I want to thank everybody and wish everybody a great, great day today. Tomorrow is my husband's 70th birthday, so I'll be probably singing to him on the radio. No, I won't embarrass him like that. But and then Wednesday we're going to talk about 911, and I've got some stuff pulled together with some of the repercussions that happened from 911, and I'd kind of like, if you remember where you were that day and you'd like to share that with us, please call in at 347-989-0352 and share that with us. It was certainly a wake-up call for all of us. So, but for the rest of today, have a great one. It looks like the sun is shining real nice. We'll probably have some rain this afternoon. It's that time of year here in Florida. But have a great day, and we will be with you tomorrow morning, everybody. Have the perfect day and meet some new friends. So this is Rini from my heart to yours saying have a good one and God bless. Talk to you in a little bit, Shel.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good day, Rini. Have a good day, everybody.
Bye-bye, honey.
Bye-bye.